wife for you today. Happy Halloween. Here's my trick or treat. A treat. Double sound. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we have with us, Bernard Starr is back with us. Because as we were leaving the program today, Bernie and I found an issue that we started talking about. And I said, you know, Bernie, I remember this was a long time ago that he specialized in this. Bernie, we're talking about people as they get older and the progression as people go from one place to another. And Bernard Starr was one of the first people to ever write about this. In fact, he was writing about not only people getting older, but he was wrote the first book on the sexuality related to aging, which we may talk about. But here's the main issue, and the reason why this is such a big issue. It's a secret. You know, behind our faltering economy, my friends, we have some ready, fast people who are very, very scared. Retirees, you know, who have been people who are retired, people who have, people who are retired or people who have been looking forward to retiring or potential retirees. Hey, just one second. I got a thing going on here I got to take care of. I'll be right back with you, my friends. I'm sorry. Sorry, this is Armand DeMille. We're getting a little feedback in our studio here. That's why, Reggie. So one of the issues that we were talking about and what we are talking about specifically is this thing about people who are retiring and what happens to them when they retire. Just think about this now. Most people are looking forward to the following thing. They're looking to forward to, for example, Medicare, right? People think they get to a certain age and Social Security is going to send them a certain amount of money. Well, that amount of money is usually dependent on how much money you put in. There it is. It's all fixed. It's all fixed. So that amount of money is dependent on how much money you put into it. You know, that's a great thing. So that's, if you put in enough, you get enough. But maybe it's not enough money. Maybe you're depending on something else. And most people depend on other things. They had some investment. Sometimes you put money aside as you go through life. And you get a little older and you say, oh, I'll put a little aside. It's called a 401k plan. It helps you take money away from the government and not pay taxes on it while you've got your earning power. So you buy fewer bombs and less napalm, and the money goes into your savings account. And you kind of feel justified. You pay less taxes, and it's good for you. It's a system. Well, a lot of those people have lost a fortune. They've lost half their money because of the way the stock market has fallen. And then there are pensions. You know, there are pensions, either union pensions or a pension having worked in a certain place like General Motors. But you work in General Motors, and if General Motors goes bonkers, like if they go bankrupt, which is possible, there is no pension. That pension's not guaranteed by anything. They go, you go. And a lot of firms are folding, and with them, the pensions. And then there's this one thing that Bernie brought to my attention. Bernie, in fact, welcome back to the station.
Oh, well,
yeah, all right, I was
glad to be here, Armand.
Yeah.
After not seeing you for a few years.
Right.
Here it is, 2 days in a row. Bro, I feel like I'm on a roll here.
Yeah, but it seems like I've been seeing you every day since. You know, we spent so much time together.
I know, it seems like no time has passed.
Yeah, it hasn't passed. You haven't changed.
That's the timeless dimension, which we'll talk about, is one of the solutions.
That is the timeless dimension. You're right. You're right. No, you're exactly the guy I remember, and I'm the guy you remember. So yeah, what was the other thing about home equity?
About home equity?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are many issues you touched on. I think you're referring here to the fact that at least 75% of older people are homeowners, and that most of those mortgages are paid off. So many older people do have equity, despite the fact that we know the values are heading south.
Now, the problem with having the equity is one of two. Number one, over the last 10 years, there was this army of lenders going out there saying, do reverse mortgages. And they did reverse mortgages, which people would meant, you have a house that's all paid off, it's worth $1 million, you're living at a poor level, you're barely scraping by, you're going to your dinners at 6 o'clock and getting the specials. Why don't you live a little better? And here's what we'll do. We'll lend you $500,000 against the value of your house. We'll just give you this cash, put it in your hands. You could go buy your kid, your grandkids, any kind of present you want. Well, so many people took advantage of that. And then the values of the house dropped in more than by the amount of the loan. And those very homeowners are now debtors, and they owe money. How did that happen? So, you know, it used to be, you get to a certain time in life, you take a nice cruise out on the ice. You know what I mean? You're like, okay, I've done my thing. I'm now going out on the ice. You won't see me again, and they don't see you again, and that's the end of that. That was the way it is. Now, people are living so much longer, and there is so many more people of this age, and these people are truly challenged. And I mean truly challenged.
Yes,
challenged
definitely.
To a fear point.
There are many, many hazards out there. And surely when it comes to something like reverse mortgages, if you're even considering it, you should make sure that you have an attorney that's sitting in your corner and going over that contract very carefully. Apparently there are some reverse mortgages that that do work, but very often people do find themselves out in the street at some point or with no equity whatsoever. But there is one famous case where somebody really lucked out with a reverse mortgage. And she was a very famous person. She was the oldest person in the world. I think she died around 2000. Her name was Jean Calment, French woman. In fact, she met Van Gogh. She lived in Arles. She met Van Gogh when she was a teenager. Okay, when she was in her 80s, a lawyer in her town did one of those kind of reverse mortgages that he would pay everything on the house and gave her some money, and when she died, he would get the house. Looked like a good deal. She was well in her 80s, and he was in his 40s. He eventually died at 77, and she lived to 122. Okay, so she lucked out on that. It's a very famous case, but most of us are not going to live to 122. And you have to be very careful.
What I'm seeing, Bernie, and I think the reason I want to mention this today, Dr. Bernard Starr, by the way, who I call Bernie, I don't know, does anybody else call you Bernie?
Yeah, a lot of people do now.
Okay.
Originally from Brooklyn.
Bernie from Brooklyn. Jeez, so many credentials. Well, you see, the thing I'm worried about and what I'm concerned about, and we're not seeing in the news yet, but we're going to start seeing, is suicide rates. Suicide rates are going to go higher. There are a lot of people out there. There was one other source of income for people, and that was their children. When you're an elder, your kids could support you. And before we had a falling economy, there was excess. And kids would take their excess, people who were bringing up their own children, and they would take care of their dependent aging parents. Because remember, the parents weren't supposed to live past 60. Now they're living past 80. And who's going to take care of them? So the kids, their children, who are both taking care of their own children and maybe their grandchildren, are also taking care of.
Well, that's very true. And by the way, that was true historically, but it's changing. We'll get into that. I mean, not only did the adult children take care of their parents, but it was primarily and always has been here and across the world, women, for the most part. So I once came up with this quip that another name for long-term care is daughters.
Daughters, right.
Okay. And it's true.
That's a good quip.
But as I say, that's changing. And as a matter of fact, I think it might be useful to give the backdrop to what we're talking about. First, this word aging, and we've
bandied
about that.
Oh, this is such a funny word.
It's a dirty word.
Let's just talk about the very idea that Bernard and I were talking, and I mean one of Bernard's specialties has been the whole concept, the aging process, aging in sex, aging and what happens to people. And he was one of the forerunners. I mean, this is 20 years ago, before people were even considering it. He was publishing the books on it, and they were the stuff that people looked at then but now use as Bibles. Now, but there's a trouble with it. You see, there are two things on radio you can never talk about. You can never talk about death. If you say the word death, and I'm daring you now, people will just turn off the phone. If you want to say, what's it like to die, they'll turn off the radio. They don't want to hear anything about it. People deny the existence of death to the point where they do it with a passion. They unconsciously suddenly get busy. I gotta go to the store. They don't want to hear the program. People don't want to be reminded they're going to die. The other thing that people hate is thinking about aging.
Mm-hmm.
And no, but the word is a dirty word, like you
said. Well, it is. It's a dirty word. And I ran into that, you know, for 7 years I did a radio feature on WEVD here in New York. Originally, I called it Update on Aging. And I thought that was a fine description
of
it.
But nobody listened.
And by the way, I didn't do old stuff. I did mainly human interest stuff on the Boomers Plus, and the Boomers were in their 30s.
That's another dirty word now, Boomers.
Right, it's because they're getting old. Okay, it's becoming a code for old, and I knew that would happen. But at the time, my field was child psychology, and I really stumbled into this this field of aging. And to
because most old people become children.
Right. But aging meant aging from birth. I mean, the minute we're born, we start. We start aging. So it wasn't a dirty word, but everybody hated it. My friends, my relatives, and people would frequently say to me, oh, you're still doing that geriatric stuff on the radio?
Geriatric.
So
oh
I never did geriatric.
There's a word.
But I couldn't I couldn't shake that at all, because I finally concluded that when you use the word aging, people picture in their mind the flesh-eating virus. You know, and they want, it's a club nobody wants to belong to. And yet,
I wonder, that would be an interesting experiment. When I say aging and old age, what image comes to your mind? The first one I think about is, I think of folding skin. When I think about age, I think about skin overlapping itself. I wonder what other people think of.
Well, that's the people think old as old, and sick.
Does it
and
mean
helpless,
sick,
dependent,
creaky,
people.
Can't move? What do you think? What do you think, Stephanie? Stephanie's in the studio. What comes to your mind the minute you think about that? Your first connection.
My grandfather.
What about your grandfather?
I didn't see that as a negative, though. Maybe when you love a person that's older, that helps you to not see that as a negative.
You don't see older as negative. Good.
Wisdom. Joy,
okay, so now
joy.
That's a good relationship. See, Stephanie brings up a good point. She says if your early experience with aging is one of beauty, but then you have this problem because old people die, and that associates aging with death and the pain, and that's even worse. So people don't want to go near it. Age 30, Bernie, what are the stages that people go through of this whole concept of, it starts around age 30, right?
Well, I think that's when the rumbling begins at about age 30, when people first tune into the fact that, you know, that they are aging, that they suddenly recognize maybe a gray hair, maybe a couple of wrinkles, and that's when the troops start marching and becoming, you know, cognizant of this this arena. And then, of course, it escalates as we go along. But, you know, I did want to point out, I think it's important to understand the backdrop of what we're dealing with here when we talk about aging, because the fact is that we are in the midst now of a vast revolution, very much comparable to the great revolutions of history, and it's coming in under the radar. We're not paying much attention to it. Revolutions like the Renaissance and the Industrial Revolution that totally changed the way people lived, the way they lived, worked, played, loved. It changed tremendously. And that's happening with aging. And why? Because throughout history, civilizations, societies were young. And for the first time, very soon, older people will be the dominant group in society. And that's going to bring in vast changes. In fact, one incredible statistic, just to dramatize this, is that through 99% of the time human beings have been on this planet, life expectancy was less than 20 years of age. And up through the Middle Ages of history, it was 40. And at the turn of the last century, 1900, it was 48 for men and 51 for women. So what we're talking about is longevity. Longevity has happened over the last 100 years, where we've and it's happened mostly, by the way, not because of any great breakthrough, but public health measures, nutrition, and vaccinations and antibiotics, because we had vast, you know, infant mortality earlier. And now we're fiddling around with the aging code, and there may be some breakthroughs where that will increase even more.
Even genetics.
Genetics. And but
plus,
the big segment of society now is going to be older people, and that has tremendous implications. Now, couple that also with the fact that fertility rates around the world are dropping dramatically. The populations of Italy, Japan will drop 50% over the next 100 years. The fertility rate in
China.
We think India, Italy, Bambinos. Well, the birth rate there is 1.2. They're far below replacement.
What happened? They discovered contraception?
No.
The church said it's okay?
Well, there's many reasons for it. For one thing, a lot of in Asia, too, in many parts of the world, women are not marrying. Marriageable age women are not marrying. They're much more independent. In Asia, many of them will say they don't want to get married because they don't want to take on the traditional role of women of caring for the elderly in-laws. And women have now infiltrated the work world and the executive level, so they're much more independent. But the birth rates in the industrialized world are dramatically falling, except in the U.S., and for one and only one reason: immigrants. Okay, if you partial out the white middle class population, you'll find that our fertility rate is comparable to Western Europe, which is a disaster. I mean, they are scrambling to try to figure out how to get people to have babies. So you have these two trends: the increase in the elderly population with indeterminate lifespans now, and if we have any, the current limit of life is called the Hayflick limit, 120. Okay, based on the number of times cells can reproduce. But if we break through the aging code, sky's the limit. Some people say the current generation over age 50 will be the last one to die, that we're going to achieve immortality. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. But on the other side, we have a tremendously diminishing young population by the drop in the fertility rates. So here you have this population that expects all the entitlements that you talked about and are worried about, well, how are they going to provide for their later years? And the productive workforces to support them are vanishing, are disappearing. Plus, you were talking about the adult children taking care of parents. Well, that's true in the current generation. And I have a mother-in-law who's in an assisted living facility. And when you go up there to the assisted living facility and you see the kids visiting, the kids are 60 and 70 now. Okay, those are the kids taking care of elderly relatives and parents. But the boomers married late. Women had children later. And many had fewer children than certainly in our baby boom era. And so now you find 40-year-olds with toddlers and the beginnings of arthritis and whatnot, complaining they can't keep up with their 5- and 6-year-olds. But if you fast forward that to when they turn 60, their kids are going to be teenagers still, or very young adults, and need their help.
And not only fertility change, but there seems to have been a lot of attention on the sexuality of people, which has kind of got extended to people are having sex much older because of, number one, the Viagra phenomenon, number one, and for women, they've been taking estrogen and testosterone, and they've been learning to take things that make them more sexually vibrant and alive. Mm-hmm. And so that's even more, you know, more potential there.
There was just a report last week or 2 weeks ago about women in their 50s and a tremendous rise in, quote, promiscuity.
And it's a strange thing. You know, at the same time, it's sobering in a very funny way. Women also in their 50s have a higher increase of suicide than in any other part of our population. That's a strange coincidence, don't you think?
It just jumped, that suicide rate for women in their 50s. Previously, it was mostly middle-aged men and very old men and adolescents, but now suddenly there's a jump.
Now, the highest rate of suicide is among white women in their 40s to 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Why is that going on? What's going on there? Curious as to whether single or married. Here's the interesting thing that I want everybody out there to just think for a moment. Because I think suicide is going to be something we're going to have to deal with. And deal with as, you know, you could say it's selective life. You know? I mean, whatever you want. We may give it a new word instead of suicide, you know? We may just say people ending their lives. Because if you're going to be 140 years old but you're living badly, you may choose to end it. You know, if you're 120 and you say, oh, I'm going to pull the plug on myself, would people blame you if you've got arthritis every morning, you know, and you're waking up with pains? So we may be having to redefine suicide. And I'm saying that we have to deal with the idea of it a little more than we do. We don't want to think about it, but I think we're going to see it. We're seeing it among the white women, right? We're seeing this increase. We're seeing it among... We're seeing it now. I believe we're going to be seeing it over the next 5 years. We're going to see a rash of it from the elderly, especially since now even insurance has faltered to where they limit care, especially for people with psychiatric disturbances or when things go wrong. This managed care is now limiting the services you could get as you get older, psychiatric services and as well as physical services. So you kind of like you don't have the insurance you used to have. You don't have the doctoring you used to have. And you get to a certain age and all your friends have died and the people around you have died. Mm. Suicide's going
but
up.
There is another side to that, Armand. I mean, popular wisdom would say, I mean, since we have so many fears about aging and we have so many stereotypes about older people and particularly young people, they would imagine that somebody old, wow, must be terrifying to wake up each day since they're closer to the end. They must think about death all the time and they must be depressed. Well, the fact is that the research doesn't hold that up.
No, it doesn't.
That remarkably, older people seem to be happier, more content, not that they're you know, going out dancing every night and thrilled to be old. Nobody chooses to be old. But remarkably, they have made some kind of, I hate to use the word adjustment because later we'll talk about ego transcendence, some other way of dealing with it. But there's an acceptance of it. And that is a little puzzling when you consider all of the anxiety and the fear on the other side of the trenches, the 60-year-olds and younger as they look toward
later
years.
Well, you know, Bernie, it may be that the industry grew up. I think what you're saying is very valuable. But the industry of preventative aging grew up and started hitting the commercial market when by the time you're 30 years old, you're in terror of cellulite and you're in terror of bags under your eyes and they start hitting you with it real early on. So by the time you're 30, by the time you're 40, you're buying all kinds of creams, you're getting all kinds of injections, you're getting lifts everywhere and implants.
Exactly.
And the government is sending, and the nutritionists sell it to you too. Everybody who's got an industry of any kind will sell it. If you listen to the positive mind, you'll stay young.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if you listen to BAI, you'll be youthified forever.
Also, Armand, what you're putting your finger on here is despite the fact that people, you know, hate the term aging, they don't want to talk about aging, they may not want to hear about it, but all the things that you just pointed to says that they're spending a lot of time and money dealing with aging. And then you look at the headlines in some of the popular magazines, you know, stop aging, reverse aging now, beat the clock, stay young forever, erase your wrinkles, create the age you want to be, or the one I like the best, cure aging.
You know, cure aging, as if aging is the sickness and disease.
Yeah. And then you hear these battle cries, 50 is the new 30, 70 is the new 50, and I have one to add to that, death is the new ballroom dancing.
So what we're talking about here is that something is happening and something is going to be happening. And what is the progression here? Now, I think you touch on something very important, Bernie, because you say there's something very wonderful. And I can say as I've passed on my years, as I've gotten older, boy, do I feel better. Emotionally more stable. I have more stuff under wraps. I don't panic as much. I see things and I go, oh, yeah, you know, the ceiling's falling down. We'll have to take care of that. And I may have my flair or two, you know, where I'm buzzing around, but you get a certain amount of maybe it's just the metabolism slowing. You just accept more in life. And accept not in a negative way. You just get burned up about less. Maybe you're just conserving your energy, you know, but you just get worried about less. A kid comes running to you and says, I don't know, he didn't call me. What am I supposed to do? You say, don't worry, Tatula. Don't worry. You know, somebody will happen. Something good will happen. So something happens. So what you're saying is people have a fear of aging, but aging is not necessarily frightening because the aging experience.
Well, when you look at the other side of the trenches, but our culture and the society, being ageist as it is, builds in a lot of the fears. I mean, for example, even in therapy, Freud said, you can't be analyzed after age 40. You know, that rigor mortis sets in, kind of. And it's quite interesting that that number, 40, pops up in a lot of theories and writers. For example, Dan Levinson, with his books, Seasons of a Man's Life and Seasons of a Woman's Life, there too, he targets 40 as the turning point when the fear of aging sets in, and he gives some very elaborate descriptions of the kinds of anxieties and fears and projections that people have, embodying all of the stereotypes, and that's why you would expect that there would be some kind of terror on the other side of those trenches. And as I said, the research shows that it doesn't happen. So a big question comes up along the lines of what you just indicated about yourself of, well, how is it that Armand made this shift? And I would say that, you know, something happened to that concept of me. You know, that some fundamental change took place. And a lot of people have, especially young people, have a lot of trouble understanding that. I had one person that I met at Marymount Manhattan College in a program that I was working with, and he said the best decade of his life was 70 to 80. Okay, and he gave the reasons. It's hard to understand for a lot of people.
We're going to have to get back to that, you know, but Bernie, you do allude to one piece of magic that you know about, that you've worked on, that's a tremendous gift to people, which we're going to try to pass on to you before it happens, my friends. You should know this one is coming. And we're going to talk about something related to spirituality and consciousness that's very, very available, and we're not selling it. We're just going to show it to you. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. My guest is Dr. Bernard Starr here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'm going to take a short musical break for you, and when we come back, we'll continue with our discussion.
But I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna grow and glow till I'm so blue, pure, perfect. I'm gonna put a smile on everybody's face. I'm gonna kneel and pray every day, lest I should become vain along the way. I'm just an old chunk of coal now, Lord, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday. I'm gonna learn the best way to walk. I'm gonna search and find me a better way to talk. And I'm gonna spit and and polish my old rubbish self. And I get rid of every single flaw. I'm gonna go around shaking everybody's hand. Hey, and I'm gonna be the cotton picking rage of the age. Yeah, I'm gonna be a diamond someday.
Just an old chunk of coal, but I'm going to be a diamond someday. John Anderson from the Ultimate Hits. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, my guest, Dr. Bernard Storr. And, Bernard, we were talking about what happens with people as people get older and people are going to be facing some challenges, which they've never had to face before. You know, it reminds me of, not that I want to compare old people to dinosaurs, but you know what happened to the dinosaurs when there were too many dinosaurs? What happened when there were too many dinosaurs is the food was not available in the treetops anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, they just didn't have, the big ones couldn't reach up there and get the food. So look at what's happening in our world. The people are getting older, overpopulating, leaning on the older side now, and we're looking at a world and saying, hey, we're going to be populated by people over 60 primarily. And what's happening? Economic disaster. People are not going to be able to maintain themselves. It's almost like nature is it's like a fire, you know, in a forest. It's like we're going to prune it now. We're going to make it not so comfortable. Well, humans are pretty smart, and I believe in human spirit. And so do you, I know, Bernie. And you being a specialist, how do you project that you think adults who get to a certain period, who have been dependent on all these things, who may not be able to depend on them as much, how do you think they're going to get through this?
Well, first, we have to understand who these boomers are. Remember, this is they're 77 million strong. They're aged now 44 to 62. That's a generation born between 1946 and 1964. And they're trailblazers. I mean, the dinosaur analogy holds up to an extent, but falls down when you consider that this generation of older people now, the boomers are just crossing the senior line, are different than their parents. They're going to be different than their grandparents, for sure.
Wait. Let's not get confusing. I'm specifically talking about over 62. Retirees,
yes.
Already retired. You're talking about boomers. Boomers are different groups.
Well, those who are already retired, many of them do have pensions.
What's going to happen?
It's the boomers that are coming, and that some of them have crossed the senior line already, that are going to face many of the financial crises that you're talking talking about.
What about the ones who are facing the crisis now because their pensions were beginning to falter, because even their pensions are no longer good, because their housing is no longer working for them, because they have reverse mortgages? I want to know about the 70s and 80s out there, because we are taking care of them. And what's happening to them? What happens to a group of people, not the boomers, not under 62, not the ones who are going to be, but the ones who are currently suffering? What solutions do they find? And I know you've worked with them and found a way to keep them together.
Well, I don't know that there's any real magical solution. Again, many of the current elderly are doing okay. At first, they have relatively modest standards of living. Many of them come from a history and a background that has a different concept of what it is to make it in the world. Okay, so they're doing okay, and they do have equity. The fact is that the poverty level among the elderly is the lowest among any minority group in the country.
Are we talking about the elderly white, or are we talking about minorities as well?
Well, because, minorities...
When I think of the elderly, I don't think of people with money. That's a small section of the white middle class.
Well, that's not entirely true, though.
The
fact is that 75% of all the liquid money assets in this country is in the... I'm talking about cash and liquid assets. Are in the accounts and the hands of people over 50. 75%.
Right, but it's in the white hands over 50.
Sure.
I'm talking about when you get down to New Orleans and you get down to southern Florida and you got people who thought they had something they could depend on and they can't depend on it anymore, they find a solution. And I'm trying to get you to say the solutions that they found. One of the solutions they found is community. Can you talk to me about how community works?
Well, I was talking about community in another respect in terms of the boomers coming. I think for the present generation that we're going to have to rely on government to come up with policies that ensure a standard of living for older people. That's been diminishing every year with cutbacks in Medicare, higher premiums for everything. I think the hope is that somebody like Barack Obama will be much more sensitive to that than some other people, and that they will protect the quality of life for older people. But with the boomers that are coming up, they're going to have to find some maverick solutions, and I think that they will. Remember, they are the hell no, I won't go generation. They were the ones that started communes in the 60s. They are the generation that defined life in America wherever they were. And they're going to change the scene of aging in America. I think you're going to see more sharing, more communal groups coming together. I think you're going to see a great emphasis on friendships, because the family size for that generation is going to diminish. Relatives, they're going to have to depend on friends.
You keep talking about the ones coming up, but it's happening now. There are more friendships. There is more relationships. The people are gathering together. The communities are beginning to happen, and it's one of the things that seems to be one of the ways that
That is happening. It's beginning with the current generation, and that will accelerate with the boomers behind them.
And that's what I expect
to
see. And could we take the boomers and just leave them aside for a moment, okay? And let's just talk about the people who are currently dealing with the struggle of being an older person in your 70s, and you thought you had it all under wraps, and now suddenly you turn around, and what do you find? You find a good friend. You find a small community. You find a communal living situation. You find ways to deal with it. That's one. So one of the things that many of us...
And they're depending on their children,
If you can't depend on your adult children because your adult children don't have a pot to do anything in, then you have to find another way. And what is it that the children could do with these people? And what the children could do is help them connect. Bring your parent over to a place where they could volunteer some services so that they could meet with other people. Bring them to communal settings. Get them hooked up with other people, not just for economy, but for contact. Show a human way of being there. Now, that's one big step. And we're going to be taking our calls right now at 212-209 212-209-2900. We'll be taking a call in a minute. The other thing, Bernie, is there's a spiritual transcendence that we, that people go through at a certain age. Don't you see that happening?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
What is that? Let's go to that for a minute.
You know, my book, I wrote about that extensively, calling it the spiritual emergency of the aging, to explain how it is that you have all of the this fear and anxiety about aging on one side of the trench, and then on the other side, as I pointed out, all of the research shows that there's much more contentment among the elderly than one would have imagined from all the anticipation and anxiety. And I think something happens to the sense of self that is part of a natural transition that I call ego transition, because the real crisis of aging, which we've always looked at psychologically and socially, you know, you lose this, you lose that, your status, et cetera, et cetera. But the real crisis is the what I call the ego facing its Armageddon. That's the crisis of aging. Because one of the great pillars of the ego, the me self, is throughout our life that it's always future oriented. It's looking to the past to define itself. It's uncomfortable in the now, the present moment, and it's always gearing itself up to fill its deficits. The ego is a deficit model. It always is on the move. It's up to something. It needs things, anything almost. So, and where are those needs going to be satisfied? In the future. Well, when aging starts entering the consciousness, starting at age 30, accelerating at 40, really speeding up at 50, and then running at the super speeds at 60, there's the realization that time or clock time is running out. And that is a real wall that the ego comes up against, that I call the ego's Armageddon, because an ego without a me without time is a dead me, and that essentially is the crisis of aging. And I think that when that becomes the person's existential reality, many come to grips with that, and you start seeing a transformation where that ego starts dissolving to a degree, and some other kind of consciousness seems to emerge. It's the only thing that makes any sense in explaining of why you find so much contentment in the elderly population, contrary to what we would predict. And there's a lot of research in questioning elderly, of getting their life stories,
well,
of getting
to
talk about their lives.
There's something brilliant about that, Bernie, because I hear what you're saying, and I think what you're saying, which is really important here, is that there is, once you're no longer a slave to time, once you get past the point that you say to yourself, you know, that's it, I'm done with worrying about aging, I'm done with time being something I'm fighting for and holding on to, like, you know, everybody's saying you got to have fun while you're young, and you got to do this while you're young, because as long as you have your health, once you give that up, something is freed from you. And that freedom, which it may have been a freedom from an illusion the entire time of a time pressure, once you're free of that, I think something wonderful happens and something magnificent happens. And I wish we had more time to talk about it, but I did
promise
we'd take some calls.
Yes, that's a very key factor, and that is moving out of time.
212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. We're on the air. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello. Well, we have calls. They just have to get to us. 212. Hi there, you're on the air.
Thank you.
So, Chris, let me ask you a question, okay? Yeah, and I appreciate your candor. When it comes to making decisions, did you ever notice that you are notoriously ambivalent about things? Right. So you don't really make many decisions, right? You make them eventually, but you really see many sides of a coin. And some people have even criticized you and said to you, "Well, why don't you just make up your mind?" Okay, wait, not because why. I'm just asking you for the fact. So if you, for example, if you're looking at a menu in a restaurant, it might take you longer than the average person to eat. Oh, you don't eat a good vegetarian restaurant. Yeah, so now one question to you. If you were to project in your mind the picture of a Chris who is aging poorly, a meat-eating, cigarette-smoking, sickly, coughing guy, could you picture that? Okay, so try to picture it. See what it is. I know, no, I'm not saying, wait, Chris, I'm not saying you should go there, but would you try to picture that? Try to picture it and tell me who this person looks like. Right, so who does it look like? Somebody in your family. Somebody when you were a kid. Yeah, what about Uncle Bob? Tell me about him. And he's your mother's brother? Yeah. You really dislike him, don't you? You really dislike him, don't you? He embarrasses you. His very presence embarrasses you, that he's even in your family. See, you've got such a strong feeling about this that you don't want to even be around fat people. Yeah, I understand. I thank you, Chris. Thank you very much for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there. Hello there. You're on the air. Yes. Well, one question to you. Well, I've got you. What's your name, by the way? Hey, Carlos. So, who are you living with? Right. You never had a wife or anything like that? You've been married three times. So what is it, Carlos, that makes you be married three times? Is there some part of you that just has a hard time dealing with these imperfections in people? I mean, three times is... Oh, so you marry like it's an exercise. So are you looking forward to another one, or are you kind of done with them? Are you kind of done with your relationships for now? And what happened with that relationship? Another friend? Yeah, she... Yeah, she hasn't... That's probably the problem you've had in all your relationships. You're probably not aggressive enough for the people because you've taken... Yeah, so you've taken a lifestyle of being less aggressive. Let me ask you just one more question. Just one more question. Where were you born? Was your father a very aggressive man? Oh, boy. Iceman, or ice... What? Boy, and you don't want to be like him, huh? You see? So there's a relationship between your commitment to life and your father's death. You know, were you happy he died, or would you... And were you happy he died? I mean, you had a good relationship? A good mother. So at age 33, your father dies and you make a commitment. It's not going to be me. But you think you're never going to live past age 33. A lot of people feel that way. And once you crossed over to 34, you said, okay, I'm here and I'll take care of my mom and I'll have some relationships with women. They'll all be growing along the way and I'll have some kids. But I'm just going to stay alive. Yeah. But okay, but listen, I just can't go back into. So you've done quite a bit in your life. Well, I hope you find some honey who's going to love you again, and you know, put her arms around you, embrace you the way you are. But she may, you know, you may fall in love with somebody at McDonald's. I know you are. Yeah, that's a painful thing. We'll do another program on that very specific. Yeah. The bigger thing is, what's going to happen when your mom dies is a real big question. You know? You're going to have to deal with that. Well, wait. Yeah, I hear you. I hear it coming. Thanks a lot for calling in. Right. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Listening to John Coltrane. Do A Man Called Train, because I kind of think this talks a little about some of the sentiment we're talking about. Hey, we'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. We've got some special programming for you about people who talk about dealing with crisis, a new author. And Bernie Starr, it is an absolute wonder to have you back on air. And you're going to be with us next Wednesday, right?
I hope so.
Yeah,
thank you for inviting me.
I love having you here. Thank you so much. Thanks, Stephanie Dombra, for being here and helping us out as well. I'll be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends.